I want to welcome everybody to the podcast. This is Touring for Purpose. Beth, would you do me a favor and would you introduce me to the friends that you brought to today's conversation?
I would love to do that. So we have Lauren and Lauren, both of our...
Double Laurens.
Both women's communities interns here at Saddleback Church.
I love it. How long have each of you been operating alongside of Beth in the recent season of ministry?
Well, I just started actually a couple days ago.
Okay.
So, yes,
welcome
I'm
to the team.
Pretty new. Thanks.
Okay, welcome to the team. And then Lauren number two. This should be easy because I just go Lauren and Beth, Lauren and Beth, Lauren and Beth.
I started in October.
You started in October.
Yeah.
Okay. And then this, it, you know, help our audience understand who's sitting in front of the table today. Lauren, one, who started in October. How old are you?
I'm 19.
You're 19. Oh my gosh, not even 20. Lauren, number two.
And I'm 21.
You're 21. Okay. And then Beth, you are the seasoned leader in ministry here.
41.
You're 41. With pride. I love it.
Absolutely.
You go. No shame in your game. I love it. You don't look a lick over 35, so you're doing really well. Plus, you also all have the coolest hair ever in the world. So you're gonna help us navigate a couple of things in women's ministry. So, Beth, how long have you been here at Saddleback leading the women's ministry?
So we are 18 months into this amazing journey of leading our women.
I love it. I love it. And your story is not a typical story of how you arrived in ministry. Give our listeners just a little bit of a history lesson on how you got here and what you were doing prior to becoming the leader of women.
Absolutely. So I was a nurse for 17 years, still am a registered nurse in the state of California. And God asked Scott, my husband, and my two kids and I to leave everything on the East Coast to come here and follow him for this position. I always knew I'd be in ministry.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd be a women's minister, though.
Really?
Totally. My heart has always been to unleash others, to... I really thought I was going to marry a Kenyan and live in Africa the rest of my life.
Whoa, go ahead.
Yep.
And okay, no pressure on your husband.
No pressure, right? He asked me for a date, and I was like, you don't want to live in Africa. We can't have a date. Well, God had other plans. He's the perfect, perfect minister's husband.
Okay.
And we came here. All my corporate experience has really benefited me in the role of figuring out how do we unleash women into what God has called them to do.
That's super great. I love that. And, you know, I want to like erase the preconceived notion. When you talk about unleashing people into ministry, I feel like anytime you, it's like, it's not your, you're not exclusive to women, although that's your focal point. You certainly inspire me to be a better person in the own ministry that I do. So your reach is not exclusive to just one gender. I wish churches would get that better.
Absolutely.
You know, I wish they wouldn't like draw such fine and deep lines in the sand, right? If you're a leader, you lead with those that the Lord uniquely allows you to reach and lead.
And that's really what my partner, Pastor Tom Kang, and I are doing, the men's pastor here. We're trying to align and look at both needs of men and women and then partner together and not have these separate boxes of women over here doing crafts and men over here doing barbecue.
Oh, speaking of crafts and barbecue, we could start our conversation out just by busting some of the myths that when you are trying to educate somebody or when you're starting to build a case for why somebody should be involved in ministry, specifically alongside of women, what are some of the big misconceptions? And I'm wondering if there's just going to be a bunch of people listening who are going to be like, thank you, thank you, thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that. What are they?
Yeah, so we often hear that women do crafts. You have to be a crafter.
You have to be crafty.
Crafty.
Right.
You need to know how to bake because there is obviously going to be a bake sale at some point.
Professional baking. You need to be good on the icing.
100%. You know, you need to be someone who can wear dress in shawls or knit prayer shawls.
I don't even know what a shawl is.
Like that.
Does shawl go over the shoulders?
It does.
Like a scarf, but thinner.
But thinner.
Good. I'm glad I'm on.
And so not that there's anything wrong with baking and knitting.
Right.
And,
of course.
We believe, though, that women are made for so much more, so much beyond that.
Okay.
Women want to live in Africa. They want to touch the homeless person down the street beside them.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Okay, so for the listening audience, just do me a favor and let me know if you can hear better now. I know that our feed is great through the podcast, but I want to make sure that if you're on Facebook that you're not missing anything. Just let me know by commenting in our comment section. It'll be just fine. Okay, so busting the myth.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that comes from a held on traditional, like that sounds like a church out of the 50s, right? We're going to bake, sure. We're going to wear shawls, we're going to knit our clothes, we're going to make all the school uniforms or play uniforms. That to me sounds like a church that maybe my grandmother would have loved to have gone to.
Sure. It's a different time.
It is. And it's a different time for ministry altogether. So the question is, I'm curious to know if that ministry that you just described, the myth of women's ministry, it could be that there are people who are living in a season of ministry where that is the reflection of their women's ministry.
Absolutely.
And there needs to be a consideration that we're in a different time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, we did, Mingo, it started with an assessment. We just started asking. We started going to our young girls, the two beside me, mm-hmm. others, and saying, what is missing? Why do you stop? You go through high school ministry, go to college, and then you're out.
Yeah.
And so we started asking questions. What do you want? How can we have a diverse representation of women in all that we do?
Yeah.
How are we meeting you, the woman who is a CEO at her corporation and living a life on purpose? How do we come alongside you?
Yeah, that's good.
And then help you serve.
That's great.
And we've begun to find these women who they're ready.
Yeah.
They want to use their shape in our purpose-driven language, right. But they haven't found a spot in the church.
Yeah, that's good.
And so we're just saying, come on, we got a seat for you, girl.
What do you think are the biggest barriers? And I'm going to ask across the channel here. So if we'll start with our youngest, what are some of the biggest barriers that you think exist in a young woman's mind when she's considering coming to the table, right? I'm going to come to that first thing that is ministry based, because I ran a young adult ministry for 7 years. I had very little, I think, challenge gathering a collective of young adults, men and women, but specific to a women's ministry. Is it the person that leads it? Is it not having any friends that are involved in it? I mean, what's the big barrier?
I think it's interesting because I feel like there are a lot, as young as a church as Saddleback is, there are just not a ton of young women that come to the events, that come to the trainings. And I don't know if maybe it's engaging and making sure that there's a strong and visible community of younger women that are attending these events and saying, hey guys, this is something that we all need to be a part of. That's going to be cool and fun and something that will help you figure out kind of the trajectory for your life.
Yeah, that's good. Trajectory is such a huge one, especially for young people
wanting
to make sure that you don't miss the mark, right? We may not necessarily know what the next 10 years of our life looks like, but we know the general trajectory of where we'd like to be.
Right.
Somebody asked a question, a subtle stereotype that we see in ministry is that men typically carry this visionary leader role, and women are the detail and follow-up and administrators. So can you bust that myth for me?
You know, I think we're finding that women today actually are gifted with leadership skills.
Oh, absolutely.
I remember thinking all of my life that I was created wrong because I was.
Because you're dreaming
leader.
And absolutely. Thinking and you're pioneering and you're wondering, should I be doing this?
I truly felt there was no place for me at the church, and I thought I was doing something wrong, that I was created wrong, literally. And I found that the Lord over the last 5 years has said, nope, you're exactly who I've created you to be, and you can lead and you can follow those giftings and the skill set. The beautiful thing is then finding men who are comfortable with that.
Yeah, that's good.
And I feel like we have that here at Saddleback
Church.
Yeah,
we're lucky. We're blessed to have a myriad of male leaders who welcome female vision and leadership to the table. That's what's affording us even this conversation, right?
Absolutely.
What would you say, Beth, because you're probably the most seasoned in this, with this perspective, I'm certain that you've come across ladies who say, how did you get here? What did it take? How are you breaking through those glass ceilings, right? What are some of the ways that you would encourage women who are committed to the vision but are seeing massive roadblocks as they try to remain faithful to who God made them?
Well, and it's something that the girls will talk about. For me, it took 20 years, Mingo. 20 years. The Lord told me at 19 I'd be in ministry. I served him. He continued to open the doors. He wasn't opening vocational ministry doors for me, but he gave me volunteer opportunities. And so I said, yes, it's not what I envisioned for years.
Okay.
He taught me to lead in the boardroom. He taught me to lead at the corporate level. He taught me to volunteer locally. And he kept saying, wait, wait, I'm refining, I'm shaping, I'm making.
Yeah, that's good.
Not giving you a platform until you're ready, until I've worked out a bunch of stuff in you first.
Yeah, I love that.
And then 20 years later, so ladies, it's not always fun or sexy. It was 20 years of waiting and being refined. Hmm. And then he was like, now I'm going to trust this with you, but girl, you're on a short leash.
And piece by piece, right? Piece by piece. I feel like that is the message that keeps continuing to like come to the surface in every single one of these podcasts has been the long journey below the surface that people don't see because there's nothing really to take a great picture of when you're just going through the meat grinder, right? When you're submitting your ideas and you're hoping that somebody's going to hear it and you're hoping someone's going to take a chance. It's not really an Instagrammable moment.
Nope.
But I would fair to say that, you know, you look at the life of just about every influential person in the Bible, plus all these great leaders that you get access and proximity to, and they'll tell you chapters on chapters of stuff that the Lord was developing them through in order to have one paragraph on the page, you know,
100%.
And that's something that we can't take lightly, especially when we're trying to give keys and insight to a generation that's coming to the table. I heard this statement today from one of my favorite ladies in our department, Marianne. She said, we're at the table. And it was such a killer statement when you're talking about if you're using the theory or the visual of like, am I invited to the table? Do we have a place at the table?
Yeah.
She like declared, she was like, we're at the table. Yeah. The question is, do you choose to see us or not? You know, do you recognize that? Because the plate's there. I'm in my seat. I'm in position. The question is, are you going to pass me the yams? Yep. Right. Do I get to have some ham? Right. What do you think? You know, you're talking about reaching across generations. You guys are doing that really well. You obviously reflected in your own, you know, who you surround yourself with. What are some of the benefits you're getting from being an initiator of a multi-generational ministry leadership structure?
You know, Mago, I will never look through the eyes of a 19 or 20 or 21 year old again. I won't. I don't. And so I have to surround myself with women of different ages, stages, races, ethnicities, because I will never know what it looks like through their eyes. And in fact, I've had 75 year olds come up to me and say, Beth, please don't forget us.
Yeah.
We want to be part of this movement as well. Yeah. We want in. Don't forget us. And so it's been a challenge, but we are working very intentionally to make sure that if you're 18 or you're 75, you see yourself as a Saddleback woman.
Because they're at the table.
They're at the table.
They're at the table already.
100%.
Yeah.
And they want to give how they've been shaped. They want to give it. They want to use it.
That's good. What I feel bad because I'm always sending my attention to the generation at hand, right? The one that's, you know, 5 years younger than me, 10 years younger than me. But I fail often to remember that there are 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds and 70-year-olds that have a bucket full of wisdom to bring to the table. And the best leaders are the ones that can bestow value on both sides of the table and say, there's a reason why you're here. I want you guys to partake in one another's perspective and vantage point.
Absolutely. And so we have started a mentorship initiative where we're partnering younger and older and in ways that are relevant to them, organically, connection, dinners where they're coming together, they're meeting one another, and the older women can speak and pour into. And I know, Lauren, you talked about that earlier, how that is so important, both of you, in the stage in life that you're in, where you're like, I don't know what to do next. Should I go back to NYU? Should I go here or there? How can I ask a question? No, I'm taking over here, Mingo. Well, I'm just thinking, Lauren, like you're talking about your generation. That's a big connection point I've heard over and over again. The 20-year-olds want someone who's ahead of them in life, speaking into them and giving them direction. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I think discipleship is exceptionally important, and it's something that Jesus commissioned us to do. And I think for me, getting to intern and sitting in on these meetings and seeing just the wisdom that is seated around me, I want our generation to know those things. I want that to be shared because this is the next generation of leaders that are going to come up and take over the church and who are going to run the church. And what are we leaving them with? Like, will this information get shared? Will their wisdom and their mistakes and everything get passed on? Because that's so important, and those are all, you know, learning opportunities too. And so I think just with our mentorship initiative, it's so important to have those women that, if whether or not they're in ministry or whether or not, you know, they're full-time somewhere else, but what they've learned and what they've gone through as a woman and pioneering the way for women in leadership is a huge thing. And that visibility of you and of the women leaders in our church is so important, because I think a lot of times our generation's like, oh, wait, I can be a leader in the church. I don't have to take that outside of the church. It's I can use the gifts that God's given me inside the church because there's a place for women. And until they start to see that, then, you know, it changes.
I want to ask the question, who reached out to who? So how did you guys get connected? Because this will probably solve a problem for some people who are wondering where the other generations are.
How did we get connected?
Yeah, I mean, did you make a reach to Beth, or did Beth, did you go and like, did you scout out like some influential folks in ministries that were elsewhere?
No, you know what? I'm telling you right now, and it's not even godly. I don't want to sound like I prayed, but I'm serious. I asked God when I came on this journey, I'm like, you're going to have to bring me women that can do this with me, because I can't do this.
Okay.
I cannot do this job, nor do I wasn't sure I really... Yeah, I just couldn't do it. And so I think Lauren's mom found me and we found each other. She was like, hey, can we just have coffee? Can we just have coffee? And now that started just me asking some questions, seeing my young self sitting there.
Totally.
Wishing someone would have said some of the things to me as an 18-year-old.
To change your trajectories, right? To
100%.
Help you. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
That's your gifting. You got it. Go. And also to encourage her, like, you have the scholarship at NYU, you know, go and then get equipped and then come back. And so it naturally started that way. And that's what's continued now into professional working relationship as an intern. Yeah.
What are some ways that you could recommend? Let's say we've got, I think of some of the churches that I've connected with, they've got somebody who's been given the responsibility of leading women, but maybe not all the resources there. Or people might look at Saddleback and say, oh, wow, you guys have like 20,000 people going to your church. You just cherry pick all the great women and boom, you have a great ministry. How did you break through some of the barriers of like, I love that you said you were praying for God to really bring and elevate and highlight the right people. What do you tell somebody who's building it from scratch?
Yep. So the thing that I found, I've had to make it not about me, and I'll fight that every day. I think we're all human.
Yeah.
We want a platform. We want ourselves out there. One of the things I've had to make it a goal to give it away.
Okay.
So by surrounding myself, by God bringing these awesome women here, it was like, take it. You take this, you take that, you take that. And it began to just... bring women who could walk in their shape and their gifting, and we could see it multiply. Then they poured into another group. Then they're pouring into another group. And it kind of is taking off that way. So it doesn't need to be this hard...
It doesn't need to be a one-person show.
That's what I'm getting. It can't be. To grow and to have women at the seat, women generally can compare, can compete, can be catty if we're left to our own devices. But I've watched the exact opposite. When women are truly walking in the way God created them to live and to lead, it is beautiful. And it's like a giving. It's like humbly giving.
It sounds like that's a unique, that has to be a perspective that you have to, you stumble upon that perspective, right? Because I know that I wrestle with, you get a sense of attention and you go like, oh my gosh, I'm finally here. I'm due, right? Thank God I'm still as young as I am, right? That I'm not it like beyond my prime. So I just think of the leaders that are tuning in, wondering, you know, they are finally getting a little bit of headway when it comes to recognition and it comes to followers or it comes to their ability to have a voice. And what you're saying is, when you fight yourself and you give away every single one of those opportunities. I asked you to do a podcast. You bring two other people to the table. Clearly you're practicing what you're preaching, but it's not as easy as, you know, just saying, I'm just going to die today. I'm just not going to make it about me.
Every day.
Yeah. I love
every day.
You gave a devo a couple weeks ago about dying to yourself. And I just felt, I feel the genuineness in that. And that is not an easy thing to do. So how do you use other people to remind you to not make it about you? Because it's surely so easy to, when you're like, you're the women's leader of Saddleback, you're famous, right? You wouldn't say so, but people will look at the church and they'll automatically assume it. So how do you do that? And how are you learning to do that also in her wake what does that mean for you guys as you receive things that are way above your pay grade?
I mean, I definitely think, I mean, this past summer, I was just kind of experiencing a lot of spiritual growth and not anything that I had sought out in the past, but God was starting to work in my life and I was starting to really see it for the first time.
Yeah.
So I ended up going to one of the worship nights and it was one of the first Pray Love Lead events and Beth was speaking and I remember sitting there and I was thinking, okay, I'm surrounded by these women that are older than me and I feel like I don't fit in. And my mom said, you know, you just need to go. Stop worrying about that. You just need to go. So I sat there and I watched Beth and I was like, I want to be her. That is what I want. She's up there. She's empowering women. She believes in us. And especially as she's talking about, you know, women living the way God has intended for them to live, it is so lived out in everything that she does, in everything that every woman that I have met along the way of working in the women's ministry and that, you know, whole realm, every single woman has been encouraging and loving. And I was so caught up with the fact that, you know, oh, these women might be older than me, but there's so much that I have to learn from them because they're setting the tone. So even though, you know, if I'm speaking to the college generation, if these women that I'm interacting with are in their 30s and 40s and 50s, they have so much they have already learned. So they, I mean, I'm learning so much from them and I'm being enriched by them passing down their knowledge to me of, you know, don't be catty, don't be mean, all those sorts of things. But
are you the exception to the rule? Right. Are you reflective of your entire generation or are you like one of very many, like very few that reflect that kind of wisdom?
I definitely think I'm in the midst of my generation.
Okay.
It's, I mean, it's so easy to say I'm not catty, I'm not mean, but it's a whole other different thing to try and not fall victim to what media tells us. And you should have, like how you're talking about, an Instagrammable life. And when you're in that low moment, it's not pretty. So the last thing you want to do is post about it, but society says, you know, oh, you need to put on a brave face. You need to, you know, post a nice photo. You need to do the things that society and media wants
Absolutely.
From us. So, I mean, to that same extent, it's easy to say, yeah, you know, like I'm surrounded by all of these great women, but it's a totally different thing to implement it when society's wanting a totally different thing for me. Yeah.
I think there's something really great in discipleship. You know, you look at the way Jesus picked his players, and he was picking people who had great potential, right? He wasn't picking people who were just sitting around waiting for something to do. He went after people who had businesses, right? The fishermen. He went after people who were hustling like bosses, right? I think of the tax collectors. He went after people who had connections to tons of other people, right? Those were his targets. So in any ministry, despite women's ministry, men's ministry, young adult ministry, high school ministry, married couples ministry, if you're building a leadership team, what are some of the things you're looking for, Beth?
You know, when I started out here, I was not sure what the Southern California woman was going to be like. You know, it's different from the East Coast, Amish country, Pennsylvania. And
certainly all things are different from just that specific
totally,
type of
right?
person, period.
After 40 years there. But you know what I am always attracted to? Someone who is authentic and real and gets where they are growing.
Yeah.
So gets that, whether it's like myself, an anxiety or depression journey in my life and mental health or whatever addictions you're struggling with, I wanted to surround myself with women who were in the struggle and they were going to be real about it.
That's good.
And we weren't going to all like
and
play
that's authentic.
Church.
Yeah, you're talking about authentic as in honest,
yep,
right? Honest.
100%.
We love the word authentic right now. I bet it's like the it's the $1 million word today.
Yeah.
When you're looking for somebody who's authentic, you're saying somebody who isn't going to word vom all over you and just like,
sure,
my life, blah, you know, like deal with my crap. You're talking about somebody who has a high EQ.
Yep.
Right? Somebody who's able to understand their shortcomings and their strengths and bring it to the table and be, I'm guessing, coachable is huge.
Sure. Sure. And that they would feel the freedom to speak into me.
Yeah.
Like we want to be the body. So I don't have the same lens these guys do or some of my leaders who are great with details and all that kind of stuff. So I was praying for a team that would collectively be one.
I love that.
And be unified. And so that means that's like low egos. We all had to have low egos
that's
to
good.
Be like, okay, we're going to, this one's going to go out this time, or this one's going to, and the third thing is that they are willing to say yes to very difficult things. So on the fly, you ready to go to Rwanda? Yep. You know, and so that they would be women who would say,
yes,
I'm going to do it. Yeah. If God's asking me, not Beth, if God's asking me, I'm going to do it.
That's great.
And not be fearful. Yeah, just go for it.
What are the biggest internal voice lies that you have to shut down on a regular basis?
That's a good question, Mingo. Well, I think for one, I have to if I'm still in the refining process myself over something, the Lord's dealt with me with my anger. I'm in Celebrate Recovery right now for that. It's one of the things that I'm working through as a parent. Who I have a daughter who's exactly like me, a mini-me. She just triggers me. I trigger her. It's the language. We walk around in the house. You trigger me. You triggered me.
You're pulling these triggers.
Right, totally. And so I'm working on anger from past stuff with my childhood. And so I have to tell myself that, you know, I am not. It's not over yet. My story isn't written. That he is refining me. That I am growing. And even though sometimes it feels like two steps forward and one back, I'm on a journey. And that I don't. I'm not going to be the same woman I was.
Even day to day.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, even day to day.
100%.
Yeah.
And so.
Sorry, Rachel. You were just calling Beth, and you got denied. You got sent a voicemail.
And so I think the other thing is that. There's still sometimes at 41 when I'm asked, when I have to speak in front of the group, and not so much that I get nervous of being nervous to be in front of the women, but I still will go back to the seventh grader who got terrible grades and still felt like, is the seventh grader going to come out? Are they going to like me? Are they going to? And so I have to still tell myself at 41.
No, forget it. That's seventh grade. That's 17, 27, 37. Right. 47, I think we're still going to be asking the question, like, are they going to accept me here? Yeah.
Do I make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. So same question to the two ladies to the left. What's the biggest lie you battle on a regular basis?
One of the big things is, I think, and this might be true for you too, but just the age thing and just you're too young, you're inadequate, you're not wise enough, whatever it might have been. And Satan just loves to hit with that because it's true that we're not as experienced. It's true that we don't have as much wisdom. But I think that the beautiful thing about following the Lord is that doesn't matter. And what matters is your obedience and your ability to
totally
step out in faith and
preach,
and follow Him. Yeah. In that. And I think the other thing is like, it's just that being a Christ follower is completely counterculture because with our generation, it's really hard to not have everything planned out to be like, I'm going to do 4 years here and I'm going to do this and I'm going to go here and I'm going to do this. And then at the end, I'm going to have this career and this nice job and, you know, and following the Lord says like, all you do is just follow me, like set your eyes on me and I'll show you everything.
Right.
Else.
And then you arrive at all these places and you're like, holy Jesus, I can't believe you did that.
And something that Beth has really shown me and spoken into is like that her life was all these different kind of paths the Lord took her on to get her to a place that she couldn't have even imagined.
There's no way you could
have
self-authored that kind of journey.
That.
Yeah.
Never.
And
yeah.
So.
Amish country. Never.
I love it. That's good. Yeah. Thank you for that one. Mm-hmm. Okay. Last offering for the big lie you battle on a regular basis.
Something that I've really had to work on and still working on every day is that I don't have to have everything planned out. And something that I really have learned in this past year even is that every time I go to plan something, it's that I'm planning something.
Yeah.
God is not the one that I'm taking into account when I'm thinking of, oh, I want this job or I want this major that's going to lead me to this potential job. And it's safe to have a plan. And that feels so comfortable to me. It's uncomfortable to shed that plan and follow God.
That's good. That's right on the inside of your lane, I bet. Because for me, I get like terrified thinking, there's a plan right now? So like, can we get off the plan a little bit? Or that's the first question I ask is like, if you show me the rules, can we bend some of them?
Yeah.
That is so good. I was just talking to my friend Steven in a podcast earlier that there are no dream jobs. And when you realize that following the life that the Lord intends for you is the dream life, then every opportunity, every job, every circumstance becomes the best it could be in the moment you're in it, you know? Planning everything out, I mean, surely there's a balance in that for sure. But I love that you are releasing a sense of control, because that really speaks to a control.
It's difficult.
Yeah. Right? Something mm-hmm. inside you that wants to have control of your situation, scenario, environment, context.
For sure.
So final thoughts. I want to give some final thoughts away. We talked about, we busted some myths in women's ministry. We talked about leading across generations, how necessary it is for a thriving ministry to not plateau and then wonder, like, where are all the young people? But also to grab a hold of the reality that there's wisdom spread across every generation. That we cannot abandon the 40-year-olds, the 50-year-olds, the 60-year-olds, the 70-year-olds, that God is writing a unique story in each one of those, in each one of those lives. And so we would be literally better together if we spent some time talking to one another. Beth, you're brewing on something. You're brewing on something.
This is what I shared at staff the other day, Mingo, how through tears and everything. But
yes, it was super touching. I loved it.
Jenny Allen, one of my one of the girls I follow who started the IF Gathering, she talks about how she has to do is create opportunities to push women off cliffs, to do something hard. You just need that person to go,
catapulter. You can do it. Like Mandy Tizer just said, a catapulter.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you are in a small church and you're trying to figure this out for your women, because you know women like to gather. I mean, that's going to be different than men. They always will want to gather. But they literally, I feel like all I do is work to create spaces where women can be pushed off cliffs, do hard things, and then they find that, oh, yeah, we did that. All right, God, thanks, right?
Yeah, there's a championing something together. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's women are good like that. We can come around each other and say, you got this, girl.
Totally.
You know, or we can be the exact opposite.
Yeah.
But I've watched women then come around. I see, you know, we went, took 17 of us to Rwanda. Experienced a ton of pain through the aftermath of the genocide and everything, but I see these young women coming up with ways to get AIDS down to zero.
Yeah.
You know, HIV cases zero.
Or empty orphans knocked out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm watching them do it.
Yeah, that's great.
And so
It reminds me of a quote C.S. Lewis in an old, old book. He said, you know, we're good when we talk face to face, but we become better when we operate side by side. And there's something about a collective action that I think, again, to bust one of those old school, old generation ideas of ministry that women just want to sit at a table and talk to one another, I don't think is the norm anymore. I think that we want to be, especially with the rise of the millennial, like the desire to be tethered to something much larger than themselves, way beyond their own hands in the pot. I think that we're going to see better ministries focused on young women when we realize that doing stuff side by side is going to outpace doing stuff face to face.
Absolutely.
I'm just convinced of it. I'm super convinced of it. So anyways, I want to shut this down by saying thank you so much for your insight. If people want to get connected to you, where can they follow you? Where can they see your inspirational lives?
When I turn this mic to the young generation.
I love it. Tell me how our listening audience can keep track with the efforts that you guys are doing for women in Saddleback's ministry, but also maybe to get some inspiration. If people want to connect with you, get some insight on their, I know certainly I could drag you into San Diego and you could help a bunch of people out. How can they get connected?
You can follow us on Instagram at @Saddleback_women and Facebook, our Saddleback Women page. We also have a Twitter, Saddleback Women. And our website, which is just saddleback.com.
Saddleback.com. And then go hunt down the ladies.
Hunt it down.
You ladies certainly are a power pack. I am I'm thankful that we get to see the expression of your ministry right here. Like I work alongside of Saddleback in doing so many things, but I love that this is my home team. You're a proud home team to belong to, and I really do love that. Yeah.
Well, you know what, Mingo? I have to say the last word. I want to thank you for being one of those guys that champions women.
Yeah.
You see us as teammates, as co-laborers. You are walking beside us. You actually find ways to empower the women around you, and you see us. Just like Marianne said this morning to you, you do. You do that really well, and your generation of men have come alongside all of us and have said and validated that we have gifts at the church, that we can be part of the church, and that we have a place.
Absolutely.
And so I really see that in you, and thank you.
Teamwork.
Teamwork.
High fives all across the table. Yeah. All right, lady, thank you so much. If you liked this podcast, please reshare it. Send it out to everybody who needs to hear it. You can follow us at our Facebook page is Touring for Purpose. And then, we just appreciate you guys joining us in this conversation. Please share it so that other people can join the conversation about women in ministry and how critical it is to the church, not just of tomorrow, but for today. We'll talk to you guys soon.